Presented by T-Mobile, the official wireless partner of Odyssey Sports. With an awesome network and great savings, there's never been a better time to join T-Mobile. Visit your neighborhood store to make the switch today.
Duke's first, second, third down running back. He's played on special teams. Good in the running game, good in the passing game, good professional. Really excited to have him on board and just really look forward to working with him.
All right, so that's Bill O'Brien after practice today. Matthew Jarecki in with Seth Payne for the training camp special. Seth, how are you?
I'm good. I was a little disappointed because I just assumed that Duke Johnson's hamstring was a phantom negotiating hamstring. So when he was out at practice today and he wasn't practicing, right. I thought,
that's not something because I assumed that practice today that it was just because he's getting integrated into the team. So that's
right.
that's not the reason.
I don't think so. I think whatever his hamstring issue was, I don't know, or maybe they need to keep up the illusion that it was like a legitimate hamstring, just so he doesn't look like a guy that was faking a hamstring injury. Sometimes it depends on like what their travel schedule was and everything, because there wasn't a whole lot of time for onboarding yesterday when everybody got in Thursday, like late Thursday night, well, early Friday morning. And maybe it was they're just being sure that he gets a workout in and everything, and they'll bring him along slowly.
All right, so there's two sides to this Duke Johnson trade. There's the group of people that think, why is everybody so excited? He's a backup running back.
Yeah.
They just traded. And then there's the other side, and I'm kind of on this side, is that He's gone over 100 rushing attempts once. It was his rookie year. I feel like he's untapped potential. What do you think about this, Seth?
I think that I'm wary of thinking about guys like Duke Johnson as untapped potential, because I've seen it so many times with like CJ Spiller in Buffalo, where he doesn't get used as much as like, oh, why are they not using him? Why is Chan Gailey not using him more? And then he gets to New Orleans and you realize like, oh, okay, because he wasn't meant to be used anymore. That was the perfect amount of usage. Lamar Miller, maybe a little bit. Why aren't they using him more in Miami? And then he gets here and you realize, like, okay, maybe he's not quite cut out to be a feature back, especially behind a bad offensive line. I think that it's almost like, you know, if you had brought in a situational pass rusher, you could get excited about that because they're going to do good things on third down. I think with Duke Johnson, you bring him in and you get excited because this is a guy that can do good things on third down. And then also, as much as Bill O'Brien loves to try to be a game plan offense, you want to have as many different tools in the toolbox as possible. And there might be some games where, hey, Duke Johnson gets more carries than Lamar Miller. There might be other games where it's a Lamar Miller type of game. So you get excited about just the potential for him to be used in various situations.
You know what I like about it is he seems like a security blanket for Deshaun Watson.
Yeah.
And like, I feel like Deshaun just hasn't had enough of that. Like, he's in year three now. Look at the other young quarterbacks that are winning in the league. Mm-hmm. Jared Goff goes to the Super Bowl. Does anybody think Jared Goff's better than Deshaun Watson?
No.
But I don't think
the Rams don't even know themselves like what they have in Jared Goff yet.
Yeah.
Where I was listening to some guys on The Ringer talk about this yesterday, and it was really interesting, which is that a lot of people in the NFL now think that in terms of developing your franchise, you better know what you have in your quarterback by the end of year three. Like, is this the guy you want to commit to? Because otherwise you get stuck in the situation where you have Marcus Mariota.
Right.
Like, I don't know. Do we really like him? Or God forbid you end up like you did with Jacksonville and Blake Bortles. Like, is this our guy? I don't know. Well, we better pay him. So I think that after 3 years, the Texans are making their long-term plans for Deshaun Watson.
Well, think about this. No offensive line last year. QT goes down, Fuller goes down, and Deshaun carries them.
Right.
So all these other, like Mitchell Trubisky, they have no idea if Mitchell Trubisky is going to be good. But, you know, Deshaun Watson last year really carried that offense with no offensive line. He showed toughness. Do you think after last year, I'm comfortable giving all the money to Deshaun. He's shown that he can carry a team.
I think so. And I think when you're doing your salary cap planning and everything and all of your contracts, you're thinking about that in terms of also you're going to be paying Deshaun $30 million a year at some point here in the next couple of years. So, and you're right. Ideally, you want to build a team from the inside out. Like, ideally, old school. Hey, let's have a great offensive line. And then every time we add a little piece, that just makes the offense that much more dynamic. Not because he, I think, wants it to be this way, but because it's a situation he's in. Bill O'Brien has to build this team from the outside in. So he has the receivers already. He has DeAndre Hopkins. He has Will Fuller. He has Kiki QT. He's got some tight ends all of a sudden that you feel pretty good about as receiving threats. And now at the running back position? Can we change that and give Deshaun Watson options there so that if the pass protection is inadequate and you can't run the ball conventionally as well as you'd like, can you just kind of slice people up at the edges and on the perimeter? And it's not ideal, and it can work. At some point, you got to get the damn offensive line fixed. But for right now, Duke Johnson might be the best option.
Well, I heard you talking about today at practice. You think Duke Johnson could make the offensive line better, potentially?
Yeah. Well, because what do we need out of Deshaun Watson? One of the things is we need him to get rid of the ball quicker. And he knows that, and Bill O'Brien knows it. And there were times last year where Deshaun really would have liked to get rid of the ball quicker, but there weren't a lot of options early in the down. There were only so many guys available, and that puts more stress on the offensive line. And then they break down. Deshaun holds onto the ball. Deshaun gets hit. Deshaun throws errant throws, whatever it might be. So the more options Deshaun has, the better it makes the offensive line. The other thing that can happen is putting the defense in a bind to where you've committed a linebacker to Duke Johnson in man coverage, or you've got to commit a player to Duke Johnson, and Deshaun can figure out what the coverage is beforehand. That makes the offense better. Makes the offensive line look better. Doesn't necessarily make them better, but it makes them look better.
All right, let's go to how this trade was executed. I like the trade a lot. Like we said, I think we both agree it makes the team better in a way. Duke Johnson I'm talking about. But I'm wondering if the trade could have been done more gracefully. So they cut Deontay Foreman 4 days before the trade happened. That seems unnecessary. And they gave up a fourth, it's probably going to turn into a third if Duke Johnson's active for 10 games. That seems unnecessary based on what basically every credible person said about his trade value.
Right, like what are running backs going for? What are premier 1A running backs going for versus jackknife type guys like this? Right, and that's where it is. That's where you wonder, okay, John Dorsey is the master negotiator, GM forever, plugged in. Also, might not have any moral fiber to him whatsoever, which is an advantage in the NFL. And I know they've been working on this trade since before training camp, but I'm just trying to envision, okay, Bill O'Brien on the phone with John Dorsey. And no matter how smart Bill O'Brien is, he's new to this world of negotiating the contracts. You know, he's been involved in personnel evaluation, but it's just different. I've been involved in negotiations, like non-football negotiations. I always let my agent handle the football negotiations. I've been involved in negotiations like in real estate and in business where I can tell that like this 60-year-old dude that like owns 8 businesses and negotiates for a living, You're in negotiations with him, you can just tell you're getting worked.
You're getting screwed.
And I'm like, and there's nothing I can do about it. Yeah. Like, I know, like, why am I agreeing to this? Because the guy's so damn good, and he's not even trying. It's just like easy work for him. So I wonder, could Bill O'Brien have just held on Deontay Foreman for another week or two? Oh, McClain wrote that the deal could have been consummated before they let go of Deontay Foreman. I just worry, okay,
you know what this screams to me, Seth? I'm a guy that I will pay like $50 extra to get something today.
Right.
And instead of waiting 4 days to get it shipped in from Amazon and save myself $50, I will go out of my way to make things convenient for myself, and I'll waste money. Uh-huh. And I've been dating my girlfriend for like 4 years now. Before her, I would always get to like a week before my paycheck hit and I'd have $10 left in my bank account because I'm always making impulsive decisions. I'm good at some things. Yeah. I'm not good at planning. Like, this seems to me like Bill O'Brien was pissed off at Deontay Foreman, and it totally not a Bill O'Brien guy, and he couldn't wait to get him off the roster. So he's like, whatever. I think the trade's going to go down. I'm going to get rid of this guy right now. And what Bill O'Brien might need is a person like my girlfriend to come in and say, Matt, no, stop. You just wait 4 days, Matt.
Right. Well, no, and that's what happens with like Ryan Mallett, and a bunch of people have pointed that out when Ryan Mallett overslept. O'Brien allegedly, reportedly wanted to cut him on the spot.
Would have left him
without a backup quarterback for the weekend.
Right.
Rick Smith reportedly talked him out of it, which is that's where the checks and balances come into play. There was another situation, the KC3, the Kansas City 3, the guys that got caught smoking a blunt. Allegedly, we never say blunt. It was reported as a cigar type substance.
A marijuana cigar? Yeah,
it was a, no. It was just a cigar that had whatever in it, but it was a cigar. But they got caught smoking the night before the Kansas City game. None of those three guys played the next day. I'm a little torn because you suspend those three guys. You're left without any running backs at all because there were, I think, was it Ben Tate that got injured in that game? But like Sierre Wood could have played, but he was suspended. That's a little bit different because that's like a actual discipline issue the night before the game. But O'Brien is an impetuous guy. Like O'Brien has benched quarterbacks twice on the first game of the season. One time he definitely had to do it in Tom Savage is going to get killed. But I worry about his temperament as a general manager. He's plenty smart enough. Like there's no question about that, but there's a lot more to negotiating and being a general manager than just being a bright guy.
Yeah, and there are impulsive personalities and then there's planning personalities.
Yeah.
Like my girlfriend's frugal. She does the budget. She does the groceries. I don't know. Do you need somebody that's a GM or do you just need a Nick Caserio that's going to be the... Because
Caserio would be the great guy. Like whether he's a GM or not.
Yeah, just to say.
That person, that counsel. You get the sense that Nick Caserio up in New England can probably talk pretty frankly to Bill O'Brien.
And people say, could it be Jack Easterby?
Yeah.
And I want to go to the... I don't want it to be Jack Easterby because his whole reputation is getting people to like him.
Yeah.
So if that's your whole game, I don't know him personally, so I don't want to like judge the guy. But if that's all I've heard about Easterby is everybody loves him. Can't wait to hear him talk. You know, positivity. You see him on the side. Super positive. I want the guy that's going to be the planner for Bill O'Brien to be realistic and not mind people not liking him.
Well, I wonder, too, with Jack Easterby, if he was a culture coach in New England and all of those guys up there gush about what he was able to do for their culture. And there were guys, it wasn't just Aaron Hernandez. There were other guys before Aaron Hernandez and around then that weren't quite the same types of guys that you think of with New England. There were, I'm trying to think of the name of the, I think it was Adalius Thomas, who was kind of a guy that would live on his own schedule and everything. And I don't think you'd find a guy like that there now. And I think Jack Easterby was part of that presence of like saying like, hey, you need certain kind of guys. So when you get to cutting Deontay Foreman, I would imagine Jack Easterby's influence was heavy in saying, hey, we need to have this culture of guys. Right, right.
Yeah.
So, but Jack Easterby's also got to say, hey, Bill, look, we can maybe, A, get Duke Johnson for less, and B, maybe we can get something for Deontay Foreman.
Right.
Hey, what if Deontay comes in? Remember Taiwan? You ran Taiwan Jones five times in the game. Taiwan, that's as many runs as Taiwan's had in the last 5 years in the NFL. Like, give Deontay Foreman those carries. Maybe there's something to be traded for him. Instead of like, okay, setting the example and everything is awesome, but you can also get some pieces if you just back off a little bit.
Well, that's what you want. You want the yin and you want the yang. All right. Preseason game one in the books. It was sloppy in almost every respect. When Joe Webb's starting a whole game, it's never good. But what if there was one good thing that came out of that preseason game? Sometimes you got to hit rock bottom before you seek help. Seth Payne, Matthew Jarecki, Texans training camp special, Sports Radio 610. All right, Seth Payne, Matthew Jarecki, Texans training camp special on a Saturday. Seth, I'm going to play sound from you yesterday reacting to Matt Khalil's performance on Thursday.
Oh, my voice. Okay, I'm dreading this because I know my voice was still messed up from being sick. All right. Matt Khalil got shoved around, you know? He looks light. He looks more athletic than what they had out there, but he got pushed around. And he got called for holding on that one where the guy flopped, but it was a legitimate hold.
Yeah.
Because Khalil had to hold because he'd gotten beaten pretty easily. So I don't feel great about Matt Khalil. And none of you should have felt good about Matt Khalil. It was a weird signing to begin with, and it was never the long-term solution. I just think it might end up being uglier than I had given credit for.
So if you thought that Titus Howard was going to solve the left tackle situation, here's Clint Sterner yesterday reacting to Titus Howard's performance at left tackle.
Titus Howard struggled mightily. He would lock onto that outside linebacker, that end that was coming underneath. He would lock on him so long that he couldn't retreat and get the defensive tackle that was rushing wide. And that's just a very elementary twist that he should have seen forever. And it's blatantly obvious when you're out there at tackle and that guy takes a hard dive inside, then you know, you should know nine times out of ten that tackle, that defensive tackle swinging around.
So, Seth, I think the way the offensive line looked on Thursday night could be a good thing.
Yeah.
You know, because maybe it forces the Texans to look at themselves in the mirror and say, we don't have enough here. Matt Khalil was a pipe dream. He's missed 30 games over the last 3 years. Titus isn't ready. So if there's any trepidation, or if there was any trepidation about making a Trent Williams move, maybe now, after watching the offensive line at game speed, there is no more.
I would like to think that way. I've just seen this team convince themselves that the O-line is okay every single year during training camp, and it's been really weird. They'll have some good performances, and they'll talk themselves into it, and I think that they'll be able to talk themselves into Matt Khalil a little bit, because Matt Khalil had some good snaps in that game. You know, the interesting thing is, and this is what I'm worried they'll talk themselves into a little bit, Roderick Johnson is the third-year player out of Florida State that ended up going in for Matt Khalil and playing left tackle. He was number 63. Played left tackle after Khalil left. Then when Titus Howard moved to left tackle, Roderick Johnson moved over to right tackle. If you were to tell me, and I didn't know either of them, like who was the first-round draft pick, which guy got drafted higher? Was it Matt Khalil or was it Roderick Johnson, who I don't think was drafted at all? I would have said Roderick Johnson. Like, oh, that guy looks a lot better. He's actually blocking the guy in front of him. He's showing some power. He's playing left and right. That guy looks like he's doing all right. Like, he looked better than Matt Khalil in the game. So, because I don't want to make it sound like Matt Khalil was completely dreadful, but he really didn't look like the guy that I wanted him to be. I think where the Texans where they're going to talk themselves into something will be with somebody, either a non-Matt Khalil person or a Titus Howard moving out to left tackle, but they can't feel good about what they have right now.
That's just not what I'm looking for.
I know. You hear me trying to talk myself into it here? You're moving deck chairs around on the Titanic.
Right. But this isn't that year. Like, this isn't the year to go into the year saying, well, we feel okay about our offensive line. It's year three for Deshaun.
Right. You could feel awesome about your offensive line if you traded for Trent Williams. Like, you could do it. You could do it, bam, like that.
Like, doesn't he have kind of a domino effect on the rest of the guys? Doesn't he make everybody else a little bit better? Because they know the left spot is going to be okay.
Right. And it also allows you to slide protection to the right side of the line. Like, having a good left tackle immediately makes everybody else better because all the help can go to those other four guys. And not all four of them need it. You know, your center and two guards can take care of themselves for the most part if you've got a guy that's on an island at left tackle, as Trent Williams could be. I wonder, okay, since we were talking about Bill O'Brien and whether or not he's a little too impulsive when he's negotiating and how much he's willing to pay for a guy like Duke Johnson, how much is he willing to pay for Trent Williams, and just how desperate is Washington to get rid of him? Because the reports are that Trent Williams is just flat out
another
dug
one, in. Another yeah. one yesterday. He's not coming back.
Yeah, that he just says, and it's
you know why, right?
Well, he despises the organization.
But the medical staff didn't tell him about a tumor on his head.
Right, right. And this is the medical staff of the Redskins has gotten a lot of criticism from other players too. And when Trent Williams spoke up about it, a lot of other players like said thank you for speaking up. So it's more than just money. Like, money's always got a little something to do with it. But I almost get the sense that with the Redskins, even if they offered him an extension, which I don't think they're gonna do, I don't know if he would accept it. I think he might just want to, at this point, say, I'm getting the hell out, which gives the Redskins much less leverage, obviously.
Right.
And that's where we were with Dwayne Brown a couple years ago. And he ends up going for a second and a fourth, where the Texans had zero leverage in the middle of the season.
Well, that's the next question, Seth. Yeah. What would it take to get Trent Brown in the building? I talked to former Texans GM Charlie Casserly earlier this week. Here's what he says about what it'll take to get Trent Williams in the building.
Think of Dwayne Brown as the way to look at it. Okay, this guy is a better player than Dwayne Brown. Probably has more health problems than Dwayne Brown. I don't know that Dwayne Brown was ever suspended by the NFL. This guy was suspended by the NFL. So there's more red lights with Trent Williams. He's a better player than Dwayne Brown. So Dwayne Brown, I think, went for a two, and they swapped some picks. I don't know if the Redskins would do that. I think the Redskins would have to have a one to move him.
Okay, I'd give up a first-round pick for Trent Brown.
for Trent Williams. Yeah. Well, Trent Brown, Trent Williams, whatever. It's somebody that would have helped.
Wait, Seth, how long was I saying Trent Brown?
Oh, I don't know. You're sitting with the wrong guy. I don't notice any of it, those things like that. You might have said
Brandon, what are we doing?
Alexander Hamilton, and I wouldn't have noticed. I know who you're talking about, so that's all that matters.
Anyway, so I would give up a first round pick for Trent Williams. Like, why all these people that say, wow, people start hyperventilating when we start talking about first-round picks in the NFL. In the NBA, it's nothing. But in the NFL, it's like, okay, first of all, if you give up a first-round pick this year, what did you think that first-round pick was going to be anyway? If you go this season and the offensive line is blah like we expect it to be, you're probably using that on an offensive lineman anyway, and it's probably not going to be a first-round pick because this team's got too much talent.
The thing is, like, the first-round pick is still very valuable, and it's become more loosely used in the NFL, but it's still usually used on a relatively young player who still maybe has a contract that's worth using. Like Brandon Cooks. Brandon Cooks got traded for a first-round pick twice in 2 years.
Right.
You know, as a younger guy that could then eventually go on to get his long-term contract. So that makes sense. Trent Williams, it's hard to think of trading a first-round pick for a guy that might only have 4 years of football left in him.
Okay, what about this,
though?
It feels
like you're doubling down on, like, you're paying big money because he probably wants some new money, too, and you're giving that first-round pick.
Here's my argument against that, okay? J.J. Watt's 30 years old.
Uh-huh.
Clowney's 26, Hopkins is 27, Miller's 28. So the core of your team is in their prime anyway right now. So what do you got? You got, like, two or three great years of Watt left. Hopkins, he's a wide receiver, so that position, he probably has 3 or 4 years left in his prime. Miller's probably, who knows how long Miller has left because he's a running back. But, like, the core of your team is in their prime, and Deshaun Watson's in his developmental years, which calls for a left tackle.
Right, but okay, so what you're arguing is, hey, because these guys are in our prime, then we should completely forsake our future.
That's what
because
I said,
then yes. when those guys start declining, that's where it's nice to have a former first-round pick in your back pocket that's even still in your... This is where it's always hard. Like, it's always tempting to say, yeah, trade everything right now and double down. You know what it is? I've been on the other side of that. Because I was in Jacksonville when we were really close to going to the Super Bowl. And Tom Coughlin, who didn't have a GM, he had a vice... Michael Hughes was the vice president of football operations. But basically, Tom Coughlin was the GM. And when you give one person absolute power, it corrupts absolutely. Like, and he started spending. We got to get old guys like Carnell Lake in here. We got to get Hardy Nickerson. You remember the commercials? They were cool. And we started spending so much money. And when it doesn't work out, it comes crashing down spectacularly. No. So, like, I've been on that side of it. And then Jacksonville makes the playoffs like once in a decade after that. There's a certain point where you got to say, all right, I'm not going to sacrifice my future for somebody like Trent Williams. I might sacrifice a first-round pick for a guy that's like 25, 26 years old, but I just can't. I can't do a first-round pick for Trent Williams.
Oh, man. But I just think the way I think of it is like that the first-round pick next year, how high of a pick is that going to be? Probably not very high because they have too many good players to be totally bad this year, I would imagine.
As if you're giving up a mid-round, pick.
So yeah. What if you're giving up the 20th pick in the NFL draft,
mm-hmm.
and you can get a good player there? Now, I'm not saying you can't, but you're giving up a maybe for a definitely for Trent Williams is a definitely for what the next 3 years? He's
right.
31 years old right now,
and it all comes down to the difference. The swap out is the money though too. That's where. Like, with first-round picks, you're going to get a good player at an extremely good price.
Right.
So, that's where... But the Texans don't have as much justification for not doing it because they're sitting on $40 million of cap space.
That's I don't get it. I don't understand not spending. Because isn't the goal to make your team better, right?
Right. And I think what they would tell you, and I know what kind of was floated, was they're like, hey, we've got to pay all these guys over the next couple of years. We're gonna have to pay Deshaun Watson, we're gonna have to pay guys like DJ Reader, we're gonna have to pay these guys. I don't buy that because that's what every other team has going on too, and the cap is expanding every year. There's probably going to be way more money after. Like, if anything, there's an argument you should be spending that money right now, because some of these deals you sign right now are going to be relative bargains after the cap explodes with a new collective bargaining agreement.
That's a good point.
If the cap really starts escalating, there'll be guys that sign like a 5-year deal right now who are vastly underpaid a couple years from now. So there's really no there's no justification for holding on to your purse strings right this moment with somebody like Trent Williams.
So what would you give up? What do you think is a reasonable...
I would give up a second and a fourth, which is I think that I don't know if anybody's offered that to the Redskins yet. Would you go up to a second and a third? I might even be willing to do that. I've just got some kind of an emotional block when it comes to giving up the first round pick.
I'll tell you what, though. Somebody writes in, if you were Washington, would you be willing to trade Trent Williams? He says they have a rookie quarterback. Wouldn't you want Trent?
No, Trent Williams won't play for them. Right, that's the problem. He's saying I'm flat out not going to play for the Redskins.
Which would give the Texans that much more leverage to say, hey,
right,
second and a third.
Yeah, exactly.
You know?
Or unless they wanted Jadeveon Clowney, if they wanted to pull off some kind of player-for-player trade. It's harder to trade for Clowney right now because teams aren't allowed to negotiate a long-term deal with him. So unless it's like a Chris Paul, wink, wink, we're going to take care of you. And those are probably harder to come by than people realize. Then I don't think that's necessarily... It's going to be hard to do a player-for-player-for-trade right now.
All right, Antonio Brown's a mess. I mean, he's a mess. I love him, but he's a mess. This is nuts. The NFL's been under fire for years about CTE. Now they're saying, okay, we're going to make the helmets safer, and you have to wear them because we're sick of this. And Antonio Brown reportedly is not going to play again, ever, if he has to wear the safer helmets. So through it all, is Bill O'Brien's player philosophy coming out looking really good? We'll get to that next. Matthew Jarecki, Seth Payne, Sports Radio 610. Seth Payne, Matthew Jarecki, in for the Texans training camp special. All right, so I can't get enough of this story, Seth. First of all, Antonio Brown has frostbitten feet. You know that? Have you seen a picture of his feet?
I saw the pictures. They reclassified it. It's not frostbitten. It was a frost burn because it was... His feet were moist from the bacterial infection he had, so that when he went into this cryotherapy chamber, it froze the stuff. I don't know. It just looked painful.
Actually, that sounds like it would help it. That sounds like it would kill
it
the infection.
It seemed like almost like leeches or something, right? Like it would like eat away at the, yeah, like it would kill the, I don't know. I don't know what, it,
Did
it
you
wasn't
see the
good.
Pictures?
Yeah, I saw the picture. It more looked like he had like an extra sole on his feet that he was pulling off or something.
I would imagine that you had athlete's foot once or time.
Yeah, I had the really bad infection, which is what the theory was that he'd had, where it's the same as like trench foot, where it's a really pretty nasty case of athlete's foot. So whatever he had, it was even worse because like he had skin peeling off on top of it.
Can I just ask, did you ever just pee your pants during a game?
No, Travis Johnson used to do that all the
time.
Why? Because you're drinking so much. You don't understand, man. You don't understand how much they have you hydrating. Like, you're drinking so many fluids that sometimes, like, you're on the sideline, and to get to the bathroom, you got to go back through, like, you got to wait until there's TV timeout or something. And then, God forbid, like, the whole time
you're
running up.
Yeah, but isn't there guys, like, looking right at Travis Johnson, like, dude, what are you doing?
He would go down and sit like off to the side away from the player's box where people would stand, and he would just sit and he'd spray water on himself as he was doing it. You could do it, guy, and you're sweating so much that you could do it without anybody noticing.
Yeah.
Like it's not like everything's just water. Like when you're at that point, you have to. But now, and this is something that people don't realize, this happens all the time. Players urinate like right out in the wide open, and fans, it's amazing they never catch on to it. You get on the bench, you get down on your knees, and you have a guy on either side of you hold a towel, and then you just pee
on the ground.
You pee into a Gatorade bottle.
Ah, okay.
And it's weird because you're sitting there and you're looking around, and you think about like getting a shy bladder, like you're in front of 70,000 people.
Dude, I was talking about this morning. I can't pee if my girlfriend's in the bathroom. I can't pee. I will go into the bathroom and leave the bathroom if there's another guy in there.
Uh-huh. Oh, really?
Yeah. I don't know when it started.
You
got to
go into the stall.
Well, yeah, sometimes I'll go into the stall. I don't know when it started happening, but I could in a football stadium.
You're in for a rough awakening, a rude awakening at NRG Stadium. Because if you're not up in the press box, if you're down in the normal area, no partitions between the stalls.
No, come on.
A lot of places, yeah.
Why?
I don't know.
Why?
I don't know.
That, you know what that makes me feel like? It just makes me feel like a hog. You know, just like a farm animal. Like we're just farm it, and that's what we are. We're just fat,
like you got a hog.
Slobs, yeah. Farm animals.
They had Brandon over at Rice. They got rid of the trenches, right?
Well, Astrodome had troughs in it.
The Astrodome had troughs. Rice had troughs for a while, but I think when they renovated, they got rid of those. I kind of like the troughs. They've got you go to some places now and they've got like fancy troughs with like almost like an air conditioned, like a almost it's like Cold Stone Creamery except for urine, where it's like a cold slab of steel and you're peeing onto it. Feels very elegant.
What's the point?
I don't know. It's like it's that industrial chic that they're all doing with the designing now, where it looks like it's metal and cool and old school, but modern, yeah.
All right, so back to this Antonio Brown
thing. Right, right.
Okay, so Michael Silver has like a 19-tweet thread, which is interesting how he reported this. But he says, I'll just start. He says,
start from the beginning. Yeah, it's a fascinating story.
Okay, so Michael Silver says, quote, even before suffering bizarre injuries to his feet, Antonio Brown alarmed Raiders coaches and teammates by railing against the NFL's enhanced enforcement of helmet regulations, a policy which will likely force the star receiver to switch to a new model. Okay, so Brown's vocal resistance to the mandate during OTAs has contributed to a disconnect with the team that acquired the 7-time Pro Bowl selection via the Pittsburgh Steelers last March. So he's causing a ruckus because he doesn't want to wear this new helmet. And I'm watching, because we've been at it all these Texans practices. It is smooth. It's nobody's really making any ruckus at all. I can't imagine a player like that causing that big of a scene.
And this is why, like, that was the big question. Like, is it worth trading for Antonio Brown? Is it worth it? And right now, the Raiders have what they gave up in the trade that they would lose. He only got like $1 million signing bonus. So if Antonio Brown genuinely said that he's not coming back and playing ever again and didn't play, they wouldn't lose out on a whole lot of cash. They would lose out, obviously, on opportunity and on the draft picks that they traded. But Antonio Brown is weird, but I can't imagine. There's no way in hell he actually follows through with this.
He could not give up $30 million because of a helmet, right?
No, I don't think so. And there's no way. This is somebody saying, no, the thing that you have on your head is not protecting you enough.
Right.
You're not allowed to wear it. And he's saying, this is an injustice. This is an outrage.
Well, there's something about the helmet. He thinks he's not going to be able to catch as well.
He said he can't see as well through it. But this is the problem, though. Like, you know what, Antonio? Yes, you're one of the best wide receivers in the NFL, but all those other best wide receivers are wearing the approved uniform, too. Right. Like, every other player in the NFL is okay. Tom Brady put up a stink because he wanted to wear his helmet. He didn't threaten to never play again. He filed a grievance, and they felt like he went through the avenues, you know? Antonio Brown is just... Mike Florio wrote that, like, hey, well, this is what happened when somebody finally said no to Antonio Brown, because there's no way, like, you can't bend on this. The Raiders, I guess, are responsible for enforcing the league policy here. So it puts the team in a tough bind because they have to be the ones to tell their player, like, no, Antonio, we're not going to send you out there with an inferior helmet, because you know damn well that Antonio will be the first guy after he got a concussion to be like, I can't believe let me out there with an inferior helmet.
So this is the problem. Think about how much crap the NFL has taken over the last 6, 7, 8 years about CTE and concussions.
Yeah.
And they're like, I'm sick of this. They're doing everything they can to make it safer for the players. And now you got a player who don't want to be safer.
He's so weird.
Reportedly. And I guess I do get it. Like, if I'm a wide receiver and it really impedes my vision, I get it. But, you know, so reportedly he storms off and he's talking about, you know, hey, you know what? It's a wide receiver thing. They would never tell this to the star quarterbacks in the NFL. And then the people on the Raiders texted him that afternoon with a picture of Aaron Rodgers wearing the approved helmet.
Oh, yeah.
And so he comes back and he acts like nothing happened the next day.
Well, and that's the other thing, too, is the way he handled it. And this is something weird. This is something you deal with freshmen in college. Because I remember this all the time. There'd be like a freshman in college that just doesn't understand that, hey, just because you're sick doesn't mean that you get to just not show up and not tell anybody.
Right.
Like, you might have a legitimate excuse, but you got to tell people. You know, like, you have to let coaches know that you're not going to be there. Same way any kid's listening right now. Same goes for your job at McDonald's or anywhere else. Like, you do the manager the basic.
Well, maybe not McDonald's.
You tell them you're not going to be there, you know? Like,
right.
It's a big deal just to let them know that you're not going to be there. So Antonio Brown has this grievance, but then like just goes AWOL without the Raiders knowing where he was. So they're in that position of having to answer like, okay, so everybody thought it was the foot issue that was keeping him out for so long, but then he showed up and he practiced through one time and then it disappeared. So there was kind of like a 3 or 4 practice period where nobody knew what the hell was going on until somebody, I'm wondering if it was like, I wonder if Mike Mayock leaked this to Michael Silver, because Mayock's an old school guy, you know, and obviously Gruden is John Gruden. And you got to think that they're just disgusted.
I was
going to
say,
by this.
So I think Silver's got like 4 sources on this.
Okay.
So it's heavily sourced.
Yeah.
There are basically everybody. He's got a player. He's got an anonymous player in this thread. So he's got like players are pissed off. Coaches are pissed off. Everybody thinks this is the most absurd thing they've ever seen. The amount of sources Silver has tells you that everybody's looking at Antonio Brown like, you are a nut job.
It gets... And it's interesting because guys get pretty particular about their equipment. And like you go through, those equipment managers are amazing at what they can do to tweak uniforms and everything. And like with offensive and defensive linemen, a lot of it is like, how much can I grab off of you?
Yeah.
You know, so like they'll customize the jerseys. There's a seamstress that you have that you work with. Huh. So if you want to try to get a little extra fabric, like anything that you feel that an offensive lineman can grab onto, you go back, you talk to the seamstress, she'll tweak your uniform a little bit, and then like everything fits on super tight. Guys' shoes, like some guys will have 15 pairs of shoes because they're very particular about those. So they're all very particular about it. But like I can't for the life of me remember ever hearing about somebody threatening to walk off the field because they're not getting like the particular piece of equipment that they like.
Well, and really, on a serious note, what it boils down to is like, yeah, the guy's having a temper tantrum. And it's just like, and could you imagine in any workspace a guy having this temper tantrum? You can't work like that.
Yeah.
Right? I would imagine, like you played, I just could imagine, you can't work that. And this is the thing. Like the Raiders assemble this team. You got a TV GM, Mike Mayock, TV head coach, Gruden. And now you have basically a reality television star wide receiver.
They also have, now this is like, there's an old theory that kind of you can have so many guys... You can only have so many guys on a team that are jackasses before you reach a tipping point. And a lot of it matters, too, whether, you know, whether it's a star player who's an influence in the locker room versus, okay, a couple guys that are just practice squad guys, you know, you work with them and everything, but they're not a bad influence. But the Raiders have Richie Incognito, who, remember,
that's a great point,
was arrested for trying to steal his father's head from his funeral so he could freeze it. Had to be escorted out of his own father's funeral. You have Vontaze Burfict, a man who is by many considered to be almost unemployable at this point because he can't follow the rules. And then now you have Antonio Brown, and I'm sure a few others that I'm missing. So it's just a powder keg of like, this is like a kind of team that the Raiders would have had in the 70s where you could almost get away with it
because
nobody cared,
right?
You know? And but like now people care and people pay attention, well, and you can't get away with it.
And you know what the media is doing? The media is like people like us and the national guys are sitting around waiting for something like this because we still got like 3 weeks left until the NFL season starts. There's nothing real to grasp onto. Guys are going to be grasping onto this for the next 2 weeks.
Have you been watching Hard Knocks?
No, I haven't seen it.
There's only been one episode so far. It's pretty, I liked it so far. Sean Pendergast hasn't liked it. He thought the first episode was boring. I just felt like I could feel all this stuff brewing already. Like you could just, through some of the conversations that players were having, you'd realize like, oh, wow, these guys are, you know, Jonathan Abram, their first round draft pick, the safety, he's almost out of control, like, and won't listen to Gruden already. He's laying the wood like in no pads practices. You think Lonnie Johnson, it was a big deal, him hitting that guy from the Packers? At least they were all wearing pads. Like, Jonathan Abram is laying the wood, like, hitting guys unprotected, like while they're in no pads. And then when Gruden's telling him not to do it, Abram's like, no, I got to do it, coach. I got to do it. It just,
God.
So there's going to be some drama, I would suppose, but I don't know. I don't know how much of the Antonio Brown stuff we'll see.
You know what it says though? You know, how many times have we heard Bill O'Brien during training camp talk about he's the kind of guy we want on the Texans?
Yeah.
You know, hard worker, shows up. I don't know. Does he do that in previous training camps? Because he has said that continually this year.
I think they, I don't know if he's talked about it as much, but I mean, that's the type of guy that they want on the team.
I mean, he's talking about it like crazy. He talked about it again today, talking about Duke Johnson. You know, good guy. Yeah. Hard work. He's the kind of guy we want.
One thing you'll pick up, too, is he'll talk about guys' families a lot, too. So, yeah, he's always talked about that. I don't know. You know what? Now that I think about it, he hasn't brought up the families as much.
Yeah, I haven't heard
it. I used to wonder about it because I'm like, you know, that's kind of – then all of a sudden it becomes conspicuous when you don't talk about a guy's family being a good family. Like, well, hey, buddy, like, what's wrong with my family, Bill? You talk about my family.
But through it, doesn't it kind of – because there is space to make fun of Bill O'Brien for that. There's definitely a space. And there's space to criticize him because you just want more talent in the building. But doesn't this make Bill O'Brien's philosophy on players look really good?
Well – I think there's always been a school of thought that the Texans, I'll give you the history on it, Matt. For the longest time, the Texans have had the lowest number of arrests in the NFL. Like, they are always down at the bottom of the list, like second or third on the list. And that was Bob McNair. Bob McNair was very much interested in being sure that they had guys that represented the city well, which I'm cool with. Like, some people say, yeah, you got to have some outlaws on your team. If you look at it, because I actually examined this for a while and started looking at it, and some of the teams that have Boy Scouts do pretty well. Some of the teams that don't give a damn do pretty well, and some of them do poorly. And, like, I couldn't really find a correlation. I think that's been the consistent philosophy since they've been here. Where I've wondered about it is sometimes with a guy like, say, DJ Swearinger. DJ Swearinger was, like, for lack of a better term, kind of a young jackass in a lot of ways. You know, like, very rambunctious, didn't necessarily play with a lot of discipline, reportedly didn't want to play special teams, which was an issue. But I've always wondered whether O'Brien is a little too quick to throw the baby out with the bathwater with those players and say, like, all right, well, you're not our kind of guy, get out of here, versus, say, somebody like Marvin Lewis that'll take guys like that and just be super patient with them, and they'll get the most out of them. You know, one of the reasons the Bengals have been able to have some success for the most part with Marvin Lewis, despite spending almost as little as anybody else, is that they take these guys that are, like, unemployable, and they get the best out of
them. That's why he was so valuable.
Yeah, exactly, because he would get the most out of, like, Adam Pac-Man Jones found a home, you know? And
perfect.
Right, Vonta's perfect. So I'm not saying that that's how far you want to go with it, but I think that I think with O'Brien, there's room for maybe instead of saying, like, hey, get rid of guys that don't fit the mold, like, hey, Deontay Foreman, DJ Swearinger, other teams figure out a way to get the most out of these guys. Let's see if we can't do the same thing.
I've always felt like because there's so many guys on a football roster, and correct me if I'm wrong here, but I've always felt like culture's so much more important to football than it is to, like, the NBA or maybe even baseball. Because, like, it's like herding cats. You got 53 guys. Don't you need a strong overarching message so everybody, because you can't keep track of everybody individually.
Yeah, it's, you rely on kind of the culture and the leadership within each position group. And you know what? He has a really good speech about this. Is, and I'm blanking on the legendary Kansas State coach right now.
Is it Bill something?
Yeah, Brandon. Why am I blanking on Bill?
Brandon.
Anyway, so what he does every year is he gets like small groups in the position group together, like after practice, and like guys are responsible for learning something about each other, and like, and that's his whole philosophy, is that you become a leader in the. You become a leader in of your position group first, and then you branch out and you become a leader of the defense, you become a leader of the offense. But I think, like, in the NFL, you need that in the D-line room. You need at least one. You've got a J.J. Watt, you know. In the linebacker group, you need at least one veteran guy that kind of lets the younger guys know what's up. It gets tricky when, like, in a wide receiver room, Antonio Brown is your number one guy, and the other reports that came out here with Antonio Brown was that he's not paying attention during meetings. He's got like multiple tablets and his phone out in a meeting, like looking at them. It's like he's multitasking. He's not even just not paying attention to the meeting. It sounds like he's got like a whole bank of computers in front of him,
dude,
just like perusing the internet.
I get in trouble. I relate to him in that way because when my girlfriend comes home, she will just. I don't know if your wife does this, but when she gets home from work, it is, I know it's going to be 10 minutes of her talking It's ridiculous. She can just talk and talk and talk and every detail, and I'll look at my computer.
Oh,
and
yeah.
If she sees the slightest glance, yeah, I'm in the doghouse for the rest of the night. So I get it with Antonio Brown.
And Bill Snyder, obviously.
Yeah, you just lost a listener.
Horribly, horribly.
You just lost a listener.
No, it's horribly disrespectful.
Sorry.
I'm not even being sarcastic. Like, the guy's a legend.
Yeah, anyway. Okay, so by the way, is Bill O'Brien... Is this a make or break year for Bill O'Brien? That's what I want to know, because the fans are kind of treating it like that. Even the media is kind of treating it like that. So we'll talk about that next. I'm Matthew Jarecki. He's Seth Payne. This is Sports Radio 610.
You could spend the weekend doing the same old whatever, or you could conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.